This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury, and good afternoon. Welcome to Enterprise Explores. This is the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business, from the headlines down to the bottom line. And today on the show, we're going to be exploring Echelon's annual Top 100 program, a program specifically curated to boost the growth of startups around the Southeast Asian region. And to help me break down the significance of this program to startups, I'm joined, of course, in the studio by Mohan Balani, CEO and co-founder of E27, the startup ecosystem's go-to platform for insights, connections, funding, and talent opportunities. Now, recently, Echelon revealed the first 26 participants in this program for 2024, and some of them include startups from Laos, the Philippines, Malaysia, along with Singaporean applicants. And with the ever-evolving nature of the startup ecosystem, the program has shifted its mentorship-focused program to prioritize business resilience and sustainable regional growth. In its 10th edition, the conference will focus on fostering a resilient tech ecosystem across Southeast Asia and beyond with E27's flagship tech conference, Echelon X. With that, and along the course of our discussion today, myself and Mohan will be giving a better picture on the selection process for startups to enter this program, why fundraising has become more challenging in the ecosystem, as well as some of the differences between Malaysia's tech startup ecosystem with other participating countries from across Southeast Asia. And if you have any thoughts, you can get us on our U-Mobile WhatsApp number on 018-789-8899. Of course, you can also get us on X. We're at BFM Radio. Mohan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Richard.
It's been a while since we spoke. I believe the last time was pandemic-era times, lockdown, separated by not just the straits, but by physicality.
Yes.
How have things been?
Things have been very well. I mean, I'm really happy to be able to do this in a studio environment and to meet you personally. But things have been well from a standpoint of like startup funding is slowly starting to come back.
Yeah.
You know, the Q1 numbers in terms of overall regional funding has gone up. Entrepreneurs are also excitedly building new companies and solving big problems.
Yeah.
And there's, of course, a big renewed interest in AI, right?
Which I was just going to say.
Massively driving interest back in tech.
Yeah. That's been the topic of conversation almost daily, hourly, on the show. And whether or not we're doing a tech show or not, it's something that we're constantly tackling right now. But let's talk about the significance of the Echelon Top 100 program for startups in Southeast Asia, particularly in terms of visibility, mentorship, and funding opportunities.
Right. So we started the program in 2012, and we had to take a hiatus during the COVID period. So this is the 10th year that we've been doing it. And there's been a significant evolution for the program, right? So pre-COVID, when companies needed to fundraise, there was a heavy need for them to fly down into markets like Singapore, because in most cases, they didn't have the local investor communities. And most of the Singapore-based VCs would have preferred a face-to-face touchpoint and experience. Mm. So based on that, the program involved a lot of localized pitching activities, localized investor startup matchmaking activities. And fast forward to today, like, it's a completely different ecosystem. Investor communities are a lot stronger locally. So startups don't have to, you know, fly all over the place for that. You can do a lot of that on Zoom as well. And VCs are way more comfortable giving out checks despite not having met the founders before.
That's interesting. Yeah. So Did that surprise you?
It was a necessary evolution that needed to happen, really heavily driven by COVID.
Right.
So when COVID happened, a lot of VCs said, hey, let's wait and see. But at some point, right, even LPs were telling them, hey, look, you can't just be sitting on cash and not making investments. So they've had to evolve their own focuses as well.
How else has E27 and Top 100 evolved over the last couple of years?
Yeah. So we've shifted a lot of our activities to not just be only focusing on fundraising, but to be focusing on market expansion, business matchmaking with corporates, and also forging and building partnerships with other companies in the region. You know, a lot of founders today don't just want to build for a one market. They don't just want to build a one market company. They want to expand to new markets like Philippines. They want to look at Indonesia still. Some even want to go a bit more localized into markets like Malaysia, because the problems are a bit more unique to what they're building. And they need access to talent. They need access to mentors and guidance, right, to help them go through that program. So we've had to tailor our offering for Top 100 to suit these problems.
Like, and as you just mentioned, it seems seems to have expanded its reach beyond Southeast Asia. You know, yeah. We're looking at other markets like India, Bangladesh, Taiwan.
Yeah.
What kind of prompted this expansion?
Yeah, so we were actually quite pleasantly surprised as well. Like our primary target focus was still Southeast Asia companies, but we got companies from the US, from Africa, Europe,
yeah.
and even some from Bangladesh and India that have come in this week. So we've had conversations with them to ask them why, right? And they said the pretty much what everyone says, right? Southeast Asia is the fastest growing internet ecosystem in the world, and they want a piece of that pie. Most of them want to expand, not necessarily raise capital. So they're looking at expanding into markets like, again, Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand. But that's really driven by the fact that this entire region is accelerating for internet businesses faster than anywhere in the world. And we've ended up picking some companies from India, from Bangladesh this year. So we had, for example, PrioShop that came in last year. They ended up raising $5 million thanks to the programs that they took part in. And they came in this year to more aggressively expand into the region.
How does Malaysia fit into all of this? I mean, you know, sometimes we, and I'll take an example of concerts, for example. We find that people tend to fly in and kind of skip over Malaysia and go to Singapore, you know, or elsewhere. And I think for a lot of Malaysians, there's a sense of why are they skipping us? You know, what's going wrong? What are we not doing right?
Yeah.
How do we fit into that?
Yeah. So the challenge for a lot of Malaysian companies is that it is very expensive to fly to markets like Singapore. You know, the cost just to go for the trips alone is one thing, but it's also expensive to raise capital in Singapore because most of the time the founders expect you to either the investors expect you to either relocate or shift your HQ or you know, sometimes even shift your entire business out of Malaysia, right? So that makes it challenging for Malaysian companies to raise capital outside of Malaysia. So they either have to focus on capital locally or just build profitable companies. There's nothing wrong in that, but at least for the startup side, if you're not growing at a rapid pace or you're not aiming to be at a certain size or scale in a certain period of time, then you close your door out for VC investability. Now, again, there are some new funds that have launched to take advantage of these kind of companies where they are, you know, more known as rhinos in the space, right? Not unicorns, right? Where they're a bit more nimble, low valuation, but have very strong positive unit economics. So I think in that sense, right, a lot of Malaysian founders and companies will be able to benefit from that change in mindset on what it means to invest in a fast-growing tech company.
Okay. What about the evolving landscape then here in Southeast Asia in general? You're talking about how, you know, VCs are more comfortable now with signing checks with people that they've not physically met. And that seems to be something that we're seeing a lot of.
Yes.
What else is changing, though? You know, how is the mindset changing? I mean, before COVID, it was very much, you know, the kind of mindset was, you know, move fast, break things, do all of that kind of stuff. Has it changed?
So I think within the founder community, the mindset is still to push and grow. But there's also a bit more pragmatic and realistic expectations to what growth really means. So a lot of them have realized that they can't purely grow through burning capital and just increasing the top line while the losses also increase. So there has to be a shift in that entire expectation of what growth means. Now, from a global investor community standpoint, I think the world is also recognizing Southeast Asia built and founded companies and the potential for the market. So I'll give you an example, right? The Motley Fool, which is a fairly well-known global investment platform, recognized Grab as a recommended stock to buy today, right? Coincidentally, right? And I mean, it's a bit hard to put that into perspective, but think about it, right? Grab just existed like about 12, 15 years ago. And today it is recognized among, you know, global tech leaders as the stock to buy, and it was recommended to a global investment community. So I think that recognition that the region as a market can support tech companies and recognizing that Southeast Asia born brands can play on a global level is a good backing, right, and support for the investor and founder community.
Do you think then that now that Grab have kind of been highlighted, it might bring more eyeballs over for other companies coming over, starting up?
Absolutely. I think, you know, in the past, 10 years ago, the perception of the Southeast Asia consumer is that they are of a low value.
Right.
You know, they might not have the spending power. Right.
Yeah.
But today, I mean, if you just look at Grab's numbers, for example, if you just look at the middle class growth in this region, I think the world has recognized that, yes, you've got a strong middle class community that can back and support companies, but you also got a community that's extremely tech savvy, that's mobile first.
Yeah.
You know, that's adopting internet products and use cases far faster than everywhere else in the world. Philippines, for example, is no longer the fastest internet community in Southeast Asia, but the fastest growing internet economy globally. Right. So like these are the opportunities that like Southeast Asia founders being close to these markets should recognize and jump on right before anyone else realizes that.
OK, let's take a short break here, folks. This is Enterprise Explores, of course, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. I'm speaking with Mohan Balani, the CEO and co-founder of E27. We're exploring Echelon's annual Top 100 program, a program specifically curated to boost the growth for startups here in Southeast Asia. We'll be right back after these messages here on BFM 89.9.
Beautiful festive moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome back to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. Today, we're exploring Echelon's annual Top 100 program here in the studio with Mohan Balani, the CEO and co-founder of E27. Mohan, just before the break, you were talking about the Philippines and their crazy use of the internet and how they're expanding wildly. When we look at some of the other countries in this region, you know, notably, we're seeing startups from Laos, the Philippines, even Malaysia amongst some of the shortlisted participants. What challenges and opportunities do startups from this particular region face compared to the startups, I guess, that are more established, like Singapore, for example? We look at Laos, and they might not necessarily be top of mind when it comes to startup and an ecosystem.
Yep. So there are quite a few challenges they face, right? I mean, one of them is, of course, the access to talent and skilled capabilities that is needed for tech companies.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a one big part of the puzzle. The second one is the access to localized expertise when it comes to funding. So they might have like maybe strong business angel networks, but the VCs that have been able to support regional companies and have the expertise for them to scale, that might always sometimes be lacking. And that's where they might need to go to markets like Singapore, Indonesia to raise capital. Mm. And the last part really is that they want to have the best practices, the best know-how from other markets that have done it. So a lot of the Philippine founders, for example, have been learning from the Indonesian founders. So that's where when we tie it back to like platforms like Echelon, we try to showcase founders that have done well in different markets so that they are able to talk about their own unique experiences in each of these local markets. And then founders from other markets can say, hey, how can I copy these best practices and localize them?
So the sharing of knowledge amongst all of these participants.
Exactly. Sharing of knowledge, sharing of relationships, doing partnerships across different regions. Because founders have very limited resources.
Yeah.
So they need to be very smart on how they spend, you know, time, energy and capital. And sometimes it might make a lot more sense to just partner with another company or white label services or bundle services rather than just building everything on your own from scratch.
I mean, it could be interesting. You see them launch, you've got a decent CapEx, and then, you know, OpEx becomes that little bit of a problem, and then they need somebody to talk to help them through the next few phases, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So for them to navigate all of these things, they need to be able to engage individuals that have done it before. You know, so in most cases, right, what founders really need is a way for them to get to the next level at a quicker, faster pace.
Yeah.
And that also comes with relationships and face-to-face experiences. So when you have a platform like Top 100, where you have 50 companies that are all growing at a fast rate, that have their own unique challenges, they're able to quickly ping a fellow, a founder in a different market and go, hey, do you know someone that can help with this particular problem? Or I'm facing this issue. How did you face it before? Yes, how did you navigate it? And then they can move on to their issues.
Can you talk to me a little bit about the criteria that you use and consider for the selection process?
Yeah. So at the bare minimum, companies need to have launched. Right. So their product has to have gone to market. It might not have full product market fit, but it should at least be in the hands of the consumers of the businesses. Having some level of funding is helpful, whether it's angel funding or some level of seed funding. And having an idea of the customer profile, the segments that they want to go to, pricing is also relevant. The reason why we have these base minimum benchmarks is because the investor community that attends Echelon to meet these companies typically want these organizations to be at a certain level before they're willing to do the due diligence. Mm. So we just make sure that, you know, we collect enough data from them and do enough of our DD to make sure that they're at the right level.
Mm. And when you've established, you know, this company meets the criteria, they look interesting, what is it about them for you and Echelon in particular that, that makes them stand out and you know, gives you that, I guess, when you want to push them up, you want to highlight them. What is it?
So for me, what really drives like how we select these companies is really what problem are they solving? How are they making their impact and their mark in the ecosystem? You know, if you are yet another, you know, maybe consumer marketplace or e-commerce label, you might have a great business, but you might not entirely be relevant to the platform. So we're looking at what are the interesting problems we're trying to solve. And if you think about this region, there are problems in health tech that are very interesting. You know, so we've got a company called Zoala that's looking at mental health issues. There are problems in health tech from a traditional medicine standpoint. So New York Street, Indian-based company that is expanding to Southeast Asia, is looking at that. Mm. There's also problems when it comes to secondary markets, fundraising, democratizing access to capital. So a company called Non-Public in Singapore is looking at solving these problems. Mm. So I think the quality of the problem matters. Mm. You need a big enough problem in the region for the startups to want to tackle. And that's where the timing matter comes in. But then there's also areas where you know that for founders who are solving this problem, they're going to be elevating the entire country to another level.
Right.
So if we look at maybe Philippines, right? Shoppable, which is a company that is helping to build a B2B marketplace, right? That is opening up transparency to allow businesses to better procure equipment, both in and out of Philippines. And when businesses are able to do, you know, business in a fair, transparent, legal manner, the entire country gets to get elevated up. So we try to, you know, play a magic ball here, right, to see what are the problems that are interesting. But we are also constantly talking to our peers, right? Talking to the investor community, talking to corporates. So one corporate that we work very closely with, the Prudence Foundation, they particularly focus on disaster technology.
Right.
5 years ago, maybe not that interesting, but today, I mean, with climate change, with the weather patterns, right, disaster technology has become such a hot topic.
Mm.
And they're looking at, hey, can we work with companies to pivot their solutions, look at disaster technology, or can we better highlight companies that are solving for problems in this space? So for me, like it's the ability to work with smart people, smart capital, solving big problems, particularly unique to Southeast Asia, that really drives us to do this.
I mean, I spoke with a number of VCs, you know, and financiers, and the interesting thing is, the company could have a great idea, you know, but for a lot of them, it boils down to the personality of the founding member, that one person who has that vision, that drive. And how much do you think that plays a part in the selection process?
Yeah, so in the early stages, it's very, very important, especially, I would say, in the pre-seed or seed stages, because you have to have a founder that has a vision, that has the technical capability, but also has the salesmanship ability, right, to raise capital, to hire people, and to do some of the early selling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once that company reaches a Series A and above stage, then they hire a management team, and then the challenges become fairly different, right? But at the very early stages, the personality, the persona, and the background of the founder is very critical.
Mm.
If you look at the early days of the ecosystem, a lot of the founders were young.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of their efforts were brute force, was very strong willed base. A lot of the founders today are actually a lot more senior. Like I met a founder last week who's in her early 50s who had sold the company to Grab and was starting a new company in the wealth management space. Now, would you want to back a founder like that? On the surface, yes. You know, she has a wealth of experience. Mm-hmm. She knows exactly what she needs to do to get to the next level. And more importantly, she has the charisma, the persona, and the chops to get it done. And for her to hire senior people into her firm is also a lot easier than a junior person still figuring out, right? That's what I think makes Southeast Asia's ecosystem a strong, good evolution, is when you have senior, smart people who are willing to leave their good, well-paying corporate jobs to say, hey, I want to dedicate the next 5-10 years of my life solving this problem because it really needs to get done.
I want to put skin in the game.
Yeah, I want to put skin in the game. I want to be able to raise capital. I want to put my time, my effort to on some cases, their own personal integrity and reputation on the risk, right? Just to get this problem solved.
All right. Just before we take a break, and you mentioned it earlier as well about, you know, this access to mentors, to networks and whatever. What do you do, I guess, specifically or especially that Echelon does that some of these other things, the other kind of ones out there might not necessarily do? What do you think is your speciality?
Yeah. So we try to do both pieces, right, where on one level we speak to the founders and we try to ask them, hey, look, what are the issues that are most pressing to you over the next 6 months, right? Beyond purely fundraising, right? And the common theme that we get is like, I'm trying to expand to market ABC. I need to know who are the experts there that I can trust, that can introduce me to more people locally and are willing to help. Right. So typically, it's access to introductions and connections. Second thing is typically business know-how or intel or insights into particular sectors or verticals. Mm-hmm. So you might not know much about the agri-tech sector in Indonesia, but having someone who maybe comes from a family that is invested in agri-tech companies or a corporate or even a founder that has built an agri-tech company will save you, right?
Yeah.
Potentially months of headache and pain, right? If you were trying to expand into that market.
Yeah.
The last one, right, would really be insights or specific people that will help them to get the initial rollout of products going. So different founders apply things differently. Some founders would prefer to put someone from their home country, fly them in and make them the local country GM. Most founders will say, let me hire someone locally. Finding that first person is always fairly difficult. Mm. So we try to make that entire process a lot simpler. We try to find mentors that are local experts or in vertical experts. So if we have mentors that are strong in AI, strong in agri-tech, strong in health tech. And if you're a founder from a different market that wants to look at health tech in a new market, they should be able to help.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find founders who are also experts in the local country. You know, how if I want to expand the Philippines, how do I get companies set up going?
Right. Yep.
Legal structures going. What can I not do? What can I do? How long will that process take?
Mm-hmm.
And again, these are things that typically information you can get online by yourself, but just having that one conversation.
And you just don't want the headache.
Yeah, it's so much simpler. It gets you to a point way faster, and then you can go back to building your company.
Okay. Right, we need to take another short break here, folks. We are on Enterprise Explores, of course. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm here in the studio with Mohan Balani from E27. Don't go anywhere. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after these messages here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Beats, funk, mixtapes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station. Welcome back to Enterprise Explores. This is the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. I am, of course, speaking with Mohan Balani, the CEO and co-founder of E27. Mohan, the Top 100 program, it culminates in Echelon X, and now where startups have this opportunity to showcase their ideas on the pitch stage.
Yes.
How does this platform amplify the visibility and potential impact of these startups within the broader tech ecosystem then?
Yeah, so for the companies that we feel, right, are the most promising ones, we give them the opportunity to go on stage and pitch.
Mm.
And this gives them that you know, 3 minute, 5 minute session, right, to share screenshots, images about the vision that they have, the product that they have, and the problem that they're trying to solve.
So it's an elevator pitch.
Yeah, it's a full-fledged elevator pitch.
Right.
But you see, when you have that opportunity to go on stage, you have an opportunity to tell and sell your story.
Yeah.
Right. And for them to do that, right, it also forces them to really think through how they want to communicate to their stakeholders.
Mm.
And for the stakeholders listening, whether they're investors, corporates, other startup founders, it allows them to get a deeper insight into how these founders think, what was driving them to that level.
Mm.
Anthony Tan, back in 2013, did his first presentation at an Echelon Malaysia event. And the driver for him launching MyTaxi was the need to protect women.
Right.
Right? And he referenced his mom, his family members. And if you did not know Anthony or MyTaxi, you wouldn't have had that peek or insight into what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that pitch, I can still remember the goosebump feeling in the audience, because suddenly people realize that you're not just doing this for fame or for money, but you have a much deeper, more meaningful vision.
Mm.
And that's what the elevator pitch is for.
I am so thankful for Anthony Tan and what he did for how they've upended forever the taxi service here in Malaysia. People will agree with me or not. All over the region. Yeah. It's made massive, massive changes, and all from a 3 to 5 minute pitch at Echelon.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you think about it, right, that's the power of startups. Mm. Every big company today started as a small team trying to solve a big problem and having a passionate vision and story behind it.
Okay. Now, other than... when you look back, I mean, you're obviously in your 10th year now. Give me some other successful startups that have appeared at Echelon, other than Grab and MyTaxi. Yeah, some other ones, notable ones that might spring to mind.
Yeah, so I mean, just on the top 100 program alone, I mean, one of my favorite companies that has done really well is actually a Malaysian company. They started out with the name Polar Drone and then renamed themselves to Aonic. Right. They ended up raising about $4.3 million. Then the drone tech space. They operate in Malaysia, Thailand, and they work with plantations owners and those kind of things. So that was I think they were in 2017, if I recall correctly, right? A good example of a homegrown company that sustainably built themselves, raised capital, and are now doing well on a regional level. Mm. GLife is a Singapore-based company. They have raised multiple rounds of funding, including from sub-funds of Temasek, and they've expanded to Vietnam, Malaysia, and Indonesia. Mm. They're in the farm-to-table supply chain space, mm-hmm. you know, where they help get produce from markets like Malaysia into high-end restaurants and hotels to ensure a reduction of food wastage. So there are multiple of these kind of case studies. There's examples pertaining to e-commerce, to health tech companies, fintech companies. But these two kind of resonate with me because Aonic, you know, homegrown Malaysian company, and GLife is working in a space that I'm very passionate about, which is around food.
Right. So you serve as a platform for startups, investors, corporates, and government bodies to collaborate on some of these common challenges. This collaborative approach, how does it contribute to the development of the startup ecosystem in Malaysia? And how important do you think that is?
Yeah, so it is very critical, right, for an ecosystem to have different stakeholders working together collaboratively to get stuff done. No one stakeholder can work in their own bubble. So corporates need to be talking to startups because the programs that corporates create, whether is it the products or services that they build or the programs that engage startups, have to be relevant to the companies. Mm. Governments need to work on the right policies, the right programs for them to directly benefit and impact companies. For that to happen, they need to have open dialogue with startup companies. Mm. Startups and VCs also need to communicate because startups have to be building products that are investable by VCs, both from a mandate standpoint, but also from a business economic standpoint. So all these different stakeholders need to talk. And Echelon is that platform to get them all together once a year to at least get their conversation going. So on some level, when we have the panel discussions on stage, they're not just entirely to promote companies, but to also talk about critical areas pertaining to what is relevant today. So we have one panel, for example, on responsible AI. Right, and we have representatives from governments, from corporates, from startups talking. Mm. And what does it mean to build a responsible AI ecosystem? Mm. Now, no one has fully figured that out, but it's important to get that conversation going.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we've got three panels on three different markets that I feel are the most interesting and promising in the region. Indonesia, of course, Philippines, and Malaysia. Mm. Right, and we have, again, different representatives from different stakeholders, government, corporates, investors, talking about what does the entire country and region need to do to ensure that the local markets get developed. Mm.
There's a real emphasis on this kind of cross-border collaboration as well. And that, you know, I think looking at it as somebody who's interested in that, you know, I find that fascinating that there's a real push to not kind of, like you say, just segment yourselves and not just kind of isolate yourselves and really push this entire region to be something. Because I, you know, you tell me why you see this focus. Obviously, as somebody who's involved in that sector, you know, and in this area, why do you see it's so important to pull everybody together rather than say, okay, Malaysia, you do your thing. Singapore, you do your thing. Do great at what you do there before cross-bordering. But it's almost like an encouragement to start cross-border stuff fairly early on, would you say?
Yeah, so on some level, there is power in numbers.
Right.
Right. Regionally, if you combine all the different markets, it's close to 650, 700 million.
Yeah.
So there's some level of power in numbers that is a good sales point when you talk about, you know, attracting investment or attracting interest in this market.
Mm.
So that's why on one level, collaborating is important. On another level, it's also part of our culture. If you look at ASEAN body, right, Southeast Asia has been collaborating on multiple fronts. And you need to collaborate to ensure that the region is safe to allow investment to come in. You need to also collaborate to ensure that the region is able to stand up, right, to global pressures against, you know, certain market forces or certain situations.
Mm.
And if you think about it, looking at the situation in the world now, Southeast Asia does feel like a fairly safe part of the world.
I think it's one of the only areas where it feels safe right now.
Right, and I think that has also come a lot because the political leaders have constantly worked closely together to support the different nations. But more importantly, Southeast Asia also realizes that it is productive to build, to invest, and to grow economies, right? And to ensure that everyone is a productive contributor to society, right?
Mm.
And again, productivity comes through collaboration and working together.
I think there's an element of let them deal with their stuff that they're dealing with over there. And whilst they're doing that, let's take advantage of this situation where things are a little quieter here and we can kind of push ourselves and become something that we've wanted to for a while but have somewhat been held back, I would say.
But also on a deeper level, right? So if you want a, let's say, Singapore-based investor to invest in a Malaysian startup, right? Ensuring that there's already a local Malaysian investor investing in the startup is a huge plus point.
Mm.
And so that kind of already allows for local investors and regional investors to say, let's collaborate and work together, right?
Mm.
So, I mean, for me, I think Southeast Asia needs collaboration because it's a survival, to some level, it's a survivability need.
Mm.
We cannot act like an isolated country on our own.
Mm-hmm.
We rely on each other for everything from basic commodities all the way to investment and even tourism, right?
Mm.
So having that kind of mindset in this region, I think, is a huge plus point for us.
Just before we wrap up then, it's coming to mention a couple of times, AI and the future of things. I guess if you could kind of give me a percentage, rough percentage, ballpark figure, of companies that have come across your table over the past year or so that have been AI-oriented in one way or another, what kind of numbers are we looking at, or percentage are we looking at? And do you see that changing over the next year or so?
I can tell you every company I meet is trying to figure out how to have and some sort of AI strategy.
Mm.
So here's the thing, right? You don't need to build an AI product to be AI ready.
Right.
You could be reskilling your team to be using AI tools.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You could be looking at AI services that can complement what you're already doing. Or even for, let's say, a show like this, you could be using AI tools to better distribute the content that you're generating.
Mm, mm.
I think the idea of AI today is a mindset shift to reimagine what it's like engaging with your stakeholders or your customer base. And it's really like the internet first, you know, coming into play, right?
Mm.
You know, imagine in the 80s, right, where your business was maybe predominantly a storefront or a physical entity, and then came along the internet where it allowed you to reach out to a new medium of users, but it also allowed you to reimagine how you served your customers.
Mm.
And I think that's the beauty of AI today.
Mm.
So a lot of, I've spoken to, for example, health tech companies that are reimagining AI in an environment of a home for caretaking, where if you are able to use AI tools to better monitor your vitals, services can be faster rendered, right? There's AI tools in the education area where instead of learning maybe about Mahathir or Lee Kuan Yew or Jokowi, an AI tool can engage with students such that the learning is tailored to how they ask questions, right? So I think the beauty of AI coming into play is a reimagining of the way we engage our customers and stakeholders. And if businesses are not thinking about it today, there's a fair chance that they will be obsolete in the very near future.
I'm not coming across your desk at all. Okay, and just to wrap up then, can you share some insights into the, I guess, your broader mission at E27 and how initiatives like what you're doing align with your mandate to support and empower entrepreneurs in the the tech ecosystem, just to wrap up with?
Yeah. So, I mean, we started E27 and focused on it because we genuinely feel that Southeast Asia is a region with, you know, very big problems to solve that should be tackled and can be tackled by fast, nimble teams, aka startups, right? So our mission, right, is to empower the entrepreneurs with the tools to build and grow their business. Mm-hmm. So that's where we provide media services and content. We provide the investment and business matching platforms, and we provide the physical events for these different stakeholders to come together. Mm. So as long as there are entrepreneurs building products and services, we want to be there to support them so that they can't say that, oh, I did not know, or I did not have access, or I couldn't raise capital, right? We want to be that platform that democratizes access to all these different challenges with company building so that you can then focus on the product and the services that you're offering.
Mohan, thank you very much for your time today.
It has been a pleasure.
Folks, I've been speaking with Mohan Balani, the CEO and co-founder of E27. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can catch the podcast on our website at bfm.my or download the BFM app. You can also find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all of the other podcast players. Just search for Enterprise Explores. This has been Enterprise Explores. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.